Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had told y'all all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
We have a lot of great guys, a lot of great football players, great quarterbacks, a lot of great guys who are in the SEC, you know, playing quarterback. So that's awesome to see week in and week out. Definitely helps me, you know, want to raise my game to the next level and compete with those guys.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama at the Hyatt Regency. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and all the exclusive content available on 103.7thegame.com. That includes stories, video recaps, and much more. It is proudly presented by the pros at Artco Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's Artco Equipment. Cody Schutz is back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We got a jam-packed day for you here. Day three at SEC Media Days. It's Bama Day. Alabama will be the first team in the first morning session. And the Crimson Tide fans are already collecting in the lobby here at the hotel. We'll recap everything that happened yesterday. Georgia, Ole Miss, that'll be coming up in this hour. We'll also be touching on Texas A&M in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's going to be all.
Who also took the stage yesterday. We'll also touch on Houston Astros. The Pelicans had themselves an introductory press conference for the other players that they received in the Anthony Davis trade. Taking care of that. Had some fun moments there. Josh Hart commenting on, well, he commented on the humidity, which for anyone that's not accustomed to that, it's understandable. But we're going to focus in on SEC Media Days, and we're going to focus starting off today talking about the Dogs, the Georgia Bulldogs. 2 years ago, they were a Tua second half virtual performance from winning the national championship. Last year, despite the beatdown that they received at the hands of LSU inside Tiger Stadium, they were able to rebound from that and place themselves in a position to get back to the college football playoff. Then they lost once again in the second half of a game to Alabama, this time to Jalen Hurts, who was the backup quarterback this time around. That kicked them out of the college football playoff, and they were forced to play in the Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans, and they faced off against a Texas team who wanted it more. They faced off against a Longhorns team who was more physical and ended up winning the game. So Georgia ended the season with two disappointing losses in a row to close out the season. And Jake Fromm, who you heard from there to start off the show, is back. He'll be a 3-year starter. And you heard him talking about the level of quarterback play in the SEC. Once again, we've talked about it the last couple of days. There's a record 9 quarterbacks that will be attending SEC Media Days this year. That's a record. Just a few years ago, there'd only be 2 or 3 total. We have 9 here. And Jake Fromm, who's considered to be one of the best in the conference, along with Tua. Joe Burrow is putting himself in that conversation as well. Kelly Mond at Texas A&M. But Georgia and Kirby Smart and Jake Fromm talked about how they need to do a better job on the road, and particularly in hostile environments like Tiger Stadium. And Fromm, in particular, who was front and center yesterday for the Bulldogs, their star quarterback, third-year starter, talk about what needs to change for Georgia when they head on the road in those hostile environments like Tiger Stadium.
We look at those games where we didn't quite get over the hump in the past, and we want to do more this summer. And I think it starts with, we know what we do in the offseason, in the summer, how do we prepare, how we condition, how we attack camp, you know, when it comes, and really taking every single game like it's our last, and trying to go 1-0 every single week.
There was also a theme with Georgia yesterday, besides the funny moment that Kirby Smart had when he interrupted a reporter's question, when the reporter started framing the question about how all of Nick Saban's assistants have never been able to defeat their mentor when they face them as a head coach themselves, and Kirby just interrupts him and he goes, I'm well aware. They also talked about getting better. Now, look, Georgia's only lost 5 games in the first 3 years of Kirby Smart's tenure, okay? They are back. They're reaching a level of success that, despite the consistency that Mark Richt had during his tenure as the Bulldogs head coach, they've never reached this kind of level of heightened success, playing for a national championship, winning an SEC championship, playing for another SEC championship. But both Kirby Smart and Fromm talked about how they need to get better. And Fromm described it that they're just trying to get, despite the success, they're just trying to get better every day.
You know, for us, it's not really about, you know, worrying about a certain opponent or, you know, who else is on the schedule. You know, for us, it's about how can we get better this summer, you know, going into camp and really taking every single game, you know, like it's you know, the best one, you know, we're going to play.
His coach, former longtime defensive coordinator under Nick Saban there at Alabama, but Kirby Smart was also a player at Georgia, so when he took the job, that's his way of going home, as they like to say. Smart pretty much admitted that he's wondered in this offseason, and he's always wondered what he and his staff could do better to help this team reach the next level.
I think we always look internally to say, what can we do better? We do that as a staff. I hope each one of you guys do that, because I think, you know, when you're green, you grow, and when you're right, you rot. And we're always trying to stay green. So we take our coaching staff places. Our guys went and visited several NFL places. Myself went and visited with Dan Quinn over at Atlanta Falcons and got a lot of respect for him and shared some ideas. He's done a tremendous job with that organization. Visited with some general managers in the NFL. And just think that when you grow and you go get new ideas, it brings a freshness to your program that your players don't get bored with the monotonous same old, same old.
Got to love how Kirby, there's no doubt whatsoever, Cody, that Kirby Smart is Southern. It's green as green. And the accent as well. Also loved the fact, you know, the thing that Kirby and his staff have been able to do is, yes, they've been able to win right off the bat with some of the players that Mark Richt had. So he inherited a lot of those guys. But they are also killing it on the recruiting trail, and they're going toe-to-toe with the likes of Nick Saban in Alabama and Ed O at LSU, and they have one of the best recruiting classes this last year, and they have one of the best ones lined up for 2020 as well. And he talked about how they've had to work at getting better, more efficient when they're out there on the trail trying to get high school kids.
Yeah, I think anytime you look at things from a self-analysis and you say, okay, let's do quality control. How can we get better? How can we grow? How do we improve? All the things that we were talking about earlier, where we go, how do we improve at recruiting? Getting opportunities to present, put your best foot forward, to have people into your home. So you build a $63 million facility at your home location, and you want to develop relationships with kids. Every opportunity you miss to have a kid at your home is an opportunity to get better. We don't look at things from a scope of, well, we had the number 3 or number 2 or number 6 or number 10 recruiting class. That doesn't matter. We're trying to figure out how to get better. And the best way to get better is to have opportunities to present in front of those kids.
And they've done a tremendous job on that, in doing that. Because, look, they're locking up some of the best recruiting classes left and right, whether you're looking at Rivals or 247 or whatever service you are. Georgia's in the mix, and there's a reason why a lot of people expect them to once again win the SEC East, compete for an SEC championship, and compete for a spot in the college football playoff. Kirby Smart also had this to say about the young man who was very much front and center here at Media Days yesterday, his quarterback, the man who loves rocking the bow tie, the one and only Jake Fromm.
Number one, he stands up for the right things. He's very strong in his faith. He is he lives it. I mean, he lives it and he breathes it. And he does that with our players in a way that is not rubbing it in their face. And I have a lot of respect for his ability to be who he is, be confident in who he is, and still lead our team. And not create any jealousy while he's doing it. So it's a lot of credit given to his parents and his upbringing, because they have done a tremendous job with all their sons. And he's got a brother that's going to be at Auburn, which creates a unique situation. But he is a great young man.
Coach, to your left, second.
And Georgia-Auburn is good old-fashioned hate. That's the name of the rivalry between the two schools. It's the, I want to say, the oldest rivalry in the SEC, and one of the ones that has been played the most. And Fromm was asked about his brother and the opportunity to play against his brother, who's now at Auburn over there playing on the Plains.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It might be a little tough one for everyone else in the family, but I think it's going to be awesome, especially for me and Tyler to go out before the game, especially during the game, and then after the game. So it's going to be a special moment for us. You know, one, our family can kind of cherish forever, and I think it's an unbelievable opportunity.
House divided when Georgia and Auburn plays this year for the Fromm family. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, Georgia, they're one of the best teams in the conference, if not the country, without a doubt. That said, you know, can they get over the hump? You know, and you say that, and you kind of have to step back, though, because, I mean, Tua put on a phenomenal performance in that national championship game. I mean, they were one sensational play away. Tua took a sack, and then he threw the touchdown. So, I mean, they were just that close from winning their first national championship since Herschel Walker suited up for the Dogs. And then last year, they were able to bounce back from that very humbling in disappointing loss inside Tiger Stadium, where LSU kind of put the world on notice that they were back. And then they lose to Alabama again. So it'll be interesting to see how UGA responds this year, because they lose in heartbreaking fashion in the SEC Championship, and then they lay an egg. They were unprepared. they got pushed around, and they looked like a team that was sleepwalking through the Sugar Bowl. So can they put the way 2018 ended behind them and focus on this year and winning the SEC East again and winning possibly the SEC and getting into the college football playoff? We'll have to see. We got to hit a break. But when we come back here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, we'll talk a little Ole Miss football. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row right here at SEC Media Days. Day two is in the books. Yesterday it was Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. Coming up today, well, it's Alabama Day. And the Crimson Tide faithful are already pouring into the lobby. I was warned that my people would be doing so, and they're not disappointing so far. Yes, it's 6:21, and they're already here, ready to cheer on their Tide. It should be an interesting day, to say the least. I want to talk a little bit about a team that took the podium yesterday. That's the Ole Miss Rebels, and they're a curious team on what they're going to be this year. And what I mean that is, you know, they've been down for a couple years. They had to deal with the falling out of the controversy and the disgrace that Hugh Freeze brought to the program towards the tail end of his run, his tenure there in Oxford. He brought them an immense amount of success, offensive genius, got them to a Sugar Bowl, and beat Alabama twice. But then everything happened with the escort service in Memphis, and he was disgraced and shamed. And then they also had the violations from the NCAA recruiting. And they were placed on probation, and they had their scholarships reduced, and they were banned from the postseason. And Matt Luke, a Rebel through and through, was named interim coach, and then they named him head coach. And he's had to deal with the reductions in scholarships, and he's had to deal with not being able to go to a postseason. But that has been lifted. And you could tell yesterday when he got to the stage or listening to the other Ole Miss players that there's just optimism with the Rebels. He was joyful about having 85 scholarship players. He was joyful about having, you know, being able to sign 31 kids. You know, is Ole Miss going to be competitive this year? We don't know. Is Ole Miss going to be, you know, a bowl eligible team? We don't know. They're going to be going young. Their quarterback, who Matt Luke brought along with him, a freshman, Matt Carroll, was here for media days, which is a rarity. You rarely ever see that. But you could just tell by the way Luke talked about this upcoming season that he feels that it's going to be a good year, and that may have nothing to do with wins and losses, but for Luke and his staff, they feel like it's going to be a good year for the Rebels.
I think there's a lot of energy and confidence in our building for a lot of different reasons. The biggest thing is we're able to sign 31 players and get back to that 85 number for the first time since 2014. Obviously, the coordinators, I like what we've done with our staff. I think whenever you hire two national coaches of the year as your coordinators, I think it makes a statement. And then, and then the ability to go back to a bowl game. I think, the players, the fans, the energy, it's all there. Just all that excitement building and the feeling of normalcy. You come in here and talk about football and not talk about sanctions or bowl games. I think it's going to be a good year.
It's going to be a good year. I think regardless of what happens with the Rebels, whether they are competitive, whether or not they get to a bowl game and are able to take advantage of not being restricted by the NCAA. I think what you see is optimism is back in Oxford. He also, Matt Luke, talked about his young quarterback, redshirt freshman Matt Carroll, the fact that he brought him along to SEC Media Days, and which is apparent to everyone here that the offense in the team, the keys, so to speak, are being handed over to the young man. He talked about his young quarterback.
You know what? I think Matt has that competitive fire and that competitive nature. He was thrust into a leadership role, and the kids rallied around him. And I think he was a great fit this spring with Rich Rod and that edge and that passion that he coaches with. And so he was just a natural fit as a leader because of all those qualities that he has. And I think people and the teammates gravitate to him because of that.
Luke was also excited about what all the new players, and particularly the young recruits that they've brought in to help kind of lay a foundation of what they want to do there. He's looking forward to what that the type of energy, the enthusiasm that that young blood will bring to the team.
I'm excited about the energy and the chip that they're going to play with. I thought on both sides of the ball. You know, on defense, we're installing a 3-4 defense with Coach McIntyre. But to see them buy in, to see them playing with a chip on their shoulder, a bunch of guys that have played a bunch of football and they're tired of hearing about how bad they are, and to see them grow and their confidence grow is really special. And offense, you got a bunch of young, talented guys. And we will be young, but I think this offense is going to be fun to watch. I really like the direction that Rich Rod is taking it with the attitude and the toughness and the edge. So I think, although we'll be young, I do think we got some very, very talented players that'll be fun to watch.
Be fun to watch. I agree. Be interesting to see what happens with Matt Luke and the Ole Miss Rebels. They're an interesting team, much like the Missouri Tigers. I'm interested to see what they are. A lot of teams, you know, people aren't talking about them. They're not going to be competing for a conference championship, but I'll be interested to see how their season storyline ends up. We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Welcome back to the show. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days here at the Hyatt Regency in Hoover. Reminder, our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and all the exclusive content available on 1037thegame.com. That's video, interviews, recaps, as well as feature stories, is proudly presented by the pros at ARCO Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's ARCO Equipment. We spent the first half of today's show talking, recapping. Yesterday we talked about Georgia, the Bulldogs, Jake Fromm, Kirby Smart took the stage. You know, can they bounce back from a disappointing finish to their year last year where they lost the SEC championship game and then had a letdown in the All-State Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans? We also talked about the optimism surrounding Ole Miss. They're no longer on probation. They have 85 scholarship players. They were able to recruit and sign 30-plus guys. So the enthusiasm involved circling Ole Miss was apparent yesterday. Matt Luke couldn't help himself. I didn't see one coach so far this week that smiled as much as he did. He's very excited about being able to not be handcuffed, so to speak, by the NCAA this coming season. But the big one that stood out to me yesterday was the final team, and that was the Texas A&M Aggies. Now, they had themselves an interesting season. They nearly defeated the eventual national champion, Clemson. That was a very close game, even had a controversial call in it, where that game could have easily went Texas A&M's way. They had some setbacks. There were some inconsistencies throughout the year, but they end the year winning three straight in the regular season, including that epic 7-overtime game against LSU that ended in a few scuffles afterwards between assistant coaches and volunteer coaches, and Jimbo Fisher's nephew was involved. It was messy. It was messy. It was like a family reunion gone bad. But then they also won their bowl game. They got to 9 wins, and Jimbo made an impact. And a lot of people believe that Jimbo Fisher, the former assistant coach at LSU who helped LSU win a national championship, the man that former athletic director at LSU, Joe Oliva, tried to hire not once but twice while he was trying to get rid of Les Miles. He failed in both attempts. Is that Texas A&M? He's trying to build something there in College Station. Give credit to Texas A&M. They are investing into their football program. They're pretty much giving Jimbo a blank check to help them become a power in the SEC and just not a, hey, we have one great year here with Johnny Manziel. Jimbo took the stage, and he held court, as you expect. The thing that stood out to me first and foremost was he was adamant that they are not going to be a spoiler. If you look at their schedule, they have to play Clemson again this year. They have to play Alabama. They have to play Georgia, and they have to play LSU. Those are four teams that are going to be ranked in the top 10 to start off the season, possibly in the top 5 when they play Texas A&M. So a lot of people were talking, well, hey, the question was, hey, possibly are you going to be a spoiler, Jimbo? You know, and he shut that down because he doesn't view them as a team that's going to be a spoiler. He views them as a contender.
Hey, we don't want to spoil anything. We want to take care of our own, and they are great teams. But we expect to play with them and compete with them and win those games. That's why we're here. And we're not looking to spoil anything. We're looking to win something and to go handle our business and do the things we have to do. They are great programs, but Texas A&M can be the same way. And we have to go play and improve ourselves and do the things we have to do. But I think we're definitely on that track.
A lot of confidence there. A lot of confidence. That's the type of tone that you want your head coach to have, right? You don't want your head coach to come and be like, oh, yeah, you know, we're gonna have a good year. We're going to have a couple of losses, and maybe we can spoil things. No. I mean, that's the mindset of maybe like Missouri or Ole Miss. If you're Texas A&M and Jimbo's getting paid what he's getting paid, your mentality, your mindset that you have to have as your coach, as the head coach, and have that trickle down through your assistants down to your roster is that you belong and that you're going to compete for the conference championship, something they haven't done since joining the SEC. He was asked, Jimbo, about his favorite thing from this past offseason. Once again, they ended the season so strong, won their last three regular season games, including the 7 overtime game against LSU, and then won the bowl game, and the bowl game was a whooping over NC State. And he asked what he enjoyed the most from this offseason.
The biggest thing I love about our offseason, I think, is our psychological disposition about how to go about things and the way our players are approaching it and how we don't have to make and correct a lot of things as coaches. Our players and our upperclassmen are doing a great job with the leadership and of the guys we have here today, Kellen Mond, Justin Matabuke, and Braden Mann. Those guys will be some small examples of that, but there's a lot of that going on right now in creating the culture. In this league, you better have culture and be able to win and expect to win because everybody has good players. So from that standpoint, but I'm very proud of it, of our team and the things we've been able to accomplish and where we've been so far and looking forward to this year.
Looking forward to this year. There is some buzz about the Aggies here this week. Jimbo, of course, was also asked about the rivalry that it seems to be developing between LSU and Texas A&M, and he discussed that at length.
Yeah, if I can get Scott coaching and not ADing, that'd be better. No, it is. I think that, and that used to be a rivalry, and I think it is. I mean, we're so close, and I mean, you had one of the epic games in college football history. It was very unique, and I think it will butt into rivalry. And rivalries come when both teams are good. And I think, I think we're building our program to be good. LSU's established itself as a great program, and I think that's how rivalries are made. I mean, just like now everybody talks about the LSU-Alabama rivalry. Well, that wasn't a rivalry when we first went to LSU years ago. and then it evolved, and Alabama come back, and that's how you had two good programs that evolved into that. And I think that's what's happening here. LSU is established. We're establishing ourselves as a great program. And, you know, and the more rivalries and the more emotions you have in college football, I think that's what makes it such a great game. And, you know, it'll be very tough, and, you know, they're always a great opponent. So it's going to make it fun and where we're going forward.
He's not wrong there. The juice, so to speak, that Alabama and LSU has now was non-existent when Saban was the head coach at LSU. Alabama was down, and they dominated. And Saban and other coaches took care of, mainly Saban, took care of whoever Alabama had as their head coach. Mike Shula. Mike Price never coached a game because he got distracted by a trip to a club in Pensacola that cost him his job. But, I mean, there wasn't – I mean, it was always a little bit of a it was a rivalry, but it didn't have what it has now. And that's all because Saban went to Tuscaloosa after 2 years with the Miami Dolphins. And that's given that rivalry so much juice. It feels the same way here. Even though Jimbo was never the head coach at LSU, he did coach at LSU and had an immense amount of success and helped them win a national championship. And then you have everything else involved with this rivalry, with Joe Oliva trying to poach him away, not once but twice, while trying to fire Les Miles. You have the former defensive coordinator at LSU go to Texas A&M, and then there's the lawsuit involved. And there's the back and forth, and there's the fact that they both recruit the Houston area. There's a lot of LSU alums in the greater Houston area. And then you have the way the game ended, controversial fashion, seven overtimes, and then the scuffle involving Acadiana's own Kevin Falk, who was coming to the defense of someone else. Jimbo Fisher's nephews involved. There's a lot of layers to this. And it does feel that this is going to be the new rivalry, so to speak. Just makes sense. The two schools are so close to one another. They both recruit the same areas. There's all the connections between the two schools with the coaching staffs. I mean, this is going to be something that's going to be great for years to come, especially if Jimbo can make Texas A&M into a winner. Consistent winner. Consistent. It has to be consistent. Because that's what they haven't had. They've had flashes here and there. Great moments. Johnny Manziel beating Alabama. Winning the Heisman Trophy. But they were never able to have that on a consistent basis. Win 9, 10, 11 games per year. Be in the mix. They never won the SEC West Division. The year they memorably beat Alabama, they lost to LSU. You know, Kevin Sumlin was able to do some good things, but he wasn't able to have them consistent and was not able to have them develop. Plus, he wasn't able to keep a quarterback or develop a quarterback after Johnny Manziel. Jimbo was also asked on, because it became a theme yesterday, because obviously someone was writing a story about Nick Saban versus his assistants, because every Nick Saban, former Nick Saban assistant that was in attendance so far this week has been asked this. He was asked, Jimbo, about how Saban assistants have been unable to beat the man in Tuscaloosa.
As far as Nick goes, I mean, yeah, what is it going to take? It's going to take 60 minutes of football. Listen, we all know Alabama's established itself as a great program. Nick is a great coach. What is it going to take? 60 minutes of great football. You have to line up and play. And more importantly, you have to expect to win the game. Don't hope to win it. You got to expect to win. You got to win the game prepared, knowing that you can win it and play it and perform and execute. Don't worry about winning the game. Before you win it, you got to play it. And I think that's the key. Don't worry about winning it. Worry about playing well in the game, performing, making the plays when you have to, and then you'll get the results you want. But you know, they've established themselves, and they deserve it. And but, you know, we'll see in time.
There is confidence.
Is it just me, Ray, or was he kind of talking in circles there? a little bit. Because at the beginning of that clip, he says that you have to go into the game expecting to win. Not hoping to win, but expecting to win. But I think the key to the game is not playing to win or worrying about winning, but just playing well so you can get there to win. So what is it? Do you go into the game expecting to win and not hoping to win? Or are you not worried about winning? You just want to play the game well. Jimbo, Nick is in your dome so much that you can't even formulate a normal answer. People don't talk like that. Like, I'm sitting here listening to that clip. That's the first time I've heard that clip. And he talks out of both sides of his mouth back to back. That is impressive, Jimbo. I mean, wow. That was bad.
But that's what he always does.
But that just goes to show that he has, and not that anybody else has an answer for Nick Saban, but I mean, Nick Saban just has these guys. I mean, go sit in your corner and I'll call on you if I need you type of thing. Like Nick, I mean, these dudes don't know what to do with Nick Saban. You ask them a question at a podium during a press conference and he folds and says some gibberish that makes absolutely no sense and collapses on top of itself. That's impressive.
But he does say, dang gummit.
Oh, you're right. Dang Gummit is a good, and everyone calls him Jimbo. So there you go.
And I mean, his name is Jimbo. So
he's smart, Uncle Jimbo.
The man was made to be a head coach in the SEC. I mean, just the way he talks, it's and you know what? We need him in the SEC. Because look, here's the other thing, Cody. You need someone that's going to be that way. We don't have Les Miles anymore. We don't have the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, right? We need someone who's kind of a character, and Jimbo's kind of a character, right? Likes talking out of both sides of the mouth the whole nine yards. So it's good. He does all the dang gums and everything like that. He
You're
plays
smart,
it up.
Uncle Jimbo.
Jimbo.
So we kind of need him, man. We kind of need him. But yeah,
hey, you remember when Jimbo Fisher said this?
I think we've established ourselves as the premier conference in college football.
Yeah, that was when he was at Florida State. The ACC has established himself as the premier conference in college. Jimbo, go away. I will always make fun of him. I'm sorry. He's a good coach, but he's fun to make fun of. Easy to make fun of.
Cody Schutz is fired up this morning about Jimbo Fisher. I love it. My man is already raring to go. It's as if
I don't even
here.
Know why. I don't hate him particularly. There's nothing specific about the guy. It's just that one particular clip. And he had to have known this question was coming. And he literally says, well, you have to go into the game knowing you're going to win. Don't hope you're going to win. But we really don't worry about winning. We just want to go out there and play as best we can. Like, it makes no sense. And anyone listening to that, I don't understand how that flew under the radar.
Oh, man. Well, we got to hit a break here. When we come back, Cody will hopefully have his blood pressure come down a little bit. We're still going to talk A&M, so I hope you don't get too riled up there back in the
37
Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. But we'll close out hour number one here from SEC Media Days live on Radio Row. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game as we broadcast live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days. We talked all about Jimbo Fisher in the last segment. I want to talk about his quarterback quickly before we wrap up hour number one. Kellen Mond, he had some interesting things to say yesterday. I was on Ben's show, Bumper to Bumper Sports, doing a live report. He said, well, was there anything that kind of stood out to you? And I said, well, you know, Jimbo was pretty straightforward and everything like that. But when I was doing the hit with Ben, Kellen Mond was talking to the media, and he had this to say on the 7 overtime game versus LSU last year.
Yeah, it was definitely a surreal moment. You know, it got to a point in overtime, about third or fourth overtime, when you didn't even know what overtime it was in. So, I mean, just being able to play for that long, that's why Coach Smitty and Coach Fisher put so much pressure on us in practice and in the offseason. So we train. So when we go out there, you know, as you can see, a lot of the LSU players were cramping. And, you know, obviously we're just standing tall on both sides of the ball. And so I feel like that our mental toughness was where it needed to be playing a team like that. And obviously one of the top defenses, and also they say DBU. So You know, it's definitely a blessing to be able to go out there and compete the way we wanted to and have the mental toughness that we wanted to for, you know, four quarters and then an extra seven overtimes.
Better hold me back, Ray.
I got you all worked up about Jimbo.
I don't have enough time to dive into this. Just know LSU won that game twice before you finally were handed that game, Texas A&M. LSU won that game. LSU had the most points with the clock at triple zeros twice, and they said, nah, run it again before you finally won. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Said,
I'm going to end up cursing. I have to stop.
Our man said that LSU was cramping up and that he took a shot at DBU as well. You got to love that. This is what he also had to say, that, you know, of all the guys in the SEC, Tua, Jake Fromm, Joe Burrow, Felipe Franks maybe at Florida, Kellen Mond says, no, they're not the best. He is.
Ha!
Whole nother jump. I mean, I've really been studying this playbook just even more, learning more of the run checks and a lot of my reads, and not only myself, but also helping the younger guys, and that can also help me make sure I'm on top of my game. So in my opinion, I'm the best one, and that's, you know, not just because I'm a confident person, but I actually believe that. I feel like my teammates believe in me too, and Coach Fisher does. So like I just told him, I can come out here and say that in front of the media, but I got to go out and prove it on the field. So obviously the SEC is, you know, has a lot of great quarterbacks, and they've all proven it, you know, throughout the years, but I feel like I'm the best.
It's really fun to have conversations with him now, because before he understands our language, our lingo, what to expect, what things, when we see certain defenses, we see certain looks, we see certain blitzes, what to go to, how to go to, and then he even comes up with ideas now. You know what I mean? We share ideas and share. So it's fun to really watch him grow, and I think he's embracing that whole concept that it's not just throwing the ball or handing off. It's a year-round process to be the quarterback and be the leader of the football team.
That's going to do it for hour number one with Kellen Mond saying that he's the best quarterback in the SEC. Okay, then. And that LSU was cramping up during last year's seven overtime game. I'm sure that won't be bulletin board material. We got to wrap up hour number one. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row and all the exclusive content that's available right now on 1037thegame.com is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's Arco Equipment. You can hear things getting a little bit noisier in the background.
Is everyone okay?
Well,
that was allowed.
My people, my fellow.
Yeah, go ahead.
They're starting to pile up in the lobby.
So you say is little Nicky arrived? Is he in the building?
Oh, they got their signs out.
Who are they just yelling for? Why was there just a loud yell in the back?
Because a television camera walked by and they got very excited.
Okay, I'll buy that. That makes sense.
God bless them.
You put a camera in people's faces and you see a side of someone you've never seen before.
I think I'm gonna be reminded why I don't live in the state of Alabama anymore. today, I think that's gonna be a revelation. So get back on track. Yeah, things are getting a little bit more exciting here at the Hyatt Regency.
Don't let them throw you off your game, Ray. You got this.
They were just cheering. I was like, why are they cheering? Just a camera walked by. Bless their heart. So we talked Georgia. They took the stage yesterday. Tennessee took to the stage. We really don't need to dissect the Vols all that much. Just know that Jeremy Pruitt tried very hard to break the record for the longest opening remarks. It was around 22 minutes. And the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers provided us with all the information that you'll find in a media guide, including, you know, the favorite lunchtime food of his assistant coaches when they were in middle school. Well, at least that's what it felt like.
How many times did he use the word program?
Oh, man.
Because Jeremy Pruitt, he loves the word program.
He was probably 172.
I believe.
Tennessee took Georgia, even though with the name recognition of Georgia, and we dissected that. Kirby Smart, Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm was everywhere yesterday. TV, radio spots. He seemed like he was here as long as I was yesterday. So, you know, look, Georgia's got the name recognition. They're national championship contender. We know this. We know that Tennessee's trying to turn things around under Jeremy Pruitt. Matt Luke and Ole Miss, they have a lot of enthusiasm about what's going on with them because they're off of probation. They have the full amount of 85 scholarship players, and they were able to sign more than 30 guys. I want to say they signed 31 players in the last recruiting class. So excitement about what's going to happen at Ole Miss if they can build something. Same thing at Tennessee. But the buzz yesterday came with the very last team, and that was Texas A&M. And we talked about that in hour number one. Jimbo talking about the rivalry between them and LSU that's emerging, discussing last season, discussing where they go from here, so forth and so forth. And Jimbo did his whole thing that, of course, got you, Cody, fired up there, back there in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And then Kellen Mond had microphones in his face, and not only did he throw a little shade at LSU and its defensive backs and the team itself last year, he also proclaimed that he was the best quarterback in the SEC. Not Tua at Alabama, not Joe Burrow at LSU, not Jake Fromm at Georgia. No. Not Kelly Bryant, the Clemson transfer at Missouri. No, Kellen Mond believes that he's the best quarterback in the SEC. I love the confidence. I don't think I love the execution of getting that across and proclaiming that here at SEC Media Days.
There's a difference between saying, I believe I'm the best quarterback, or I can be the best, then just outright say, yeah, you know, I'm best. He definitely went full heel here when he decided to say, there's a way to say you're the best and, you know, still save a little face, but maybe that was his choice, Kellen Mond choosing to go full heel. It would fit the program there at Texas A&M.
Yeah, and it would add a little juice to everything and put, you know, everyone on notice, like, hey, Kellen Mond says he's the best, right? And, you know, let everyone know that this is what they're doing and that, you know, they're not going to be a pushover. And it kind of fits that narrative, too, that Jimbo's trying to put into place that, you know, they're not going to be a spoiler this year, Cody. They're going to be a contender. So it does fit into that, a little bit of that narrative. This is what he had to say about the fact that he thought that the LSU Tigers cramped up. The vaunted defense was cramping up during the 7 overtime game last year.
Yeah, it was definitely a surreal moment. You know, it got to a point in overtime, about third or fourth overtime, when you didn't even know what overtime it was in. So, I mean, just being able to play for that long, that's why Coach Smitty and Coach Fisher put so much pressure on us in practice and in the off season. So we train. So when we go out there, you know, as you can see, a lot of the LSU players were cramping. You know, obviously we're just standing tall on both sides of the ball. And so I feel like that our mental toughness was where it needed to be playing a team like that. And obviously one of the top defenses, and also they say DBU. So, you know, it's definitely a blessing to be able to go out there and compete the way we wanted to and have the mental toughness that we wanted to for, you know, four quarters and then an extra 7 overtimes.
Once again, we played that clip at the end of hour number one. I wanted to play it again in case you didn't hear it. He claimed that LSU was dealing with cramps. Basically, what he's saying there is that LSU wasn't conditioned properly, that they weren't conditioned the right way to be able to handle playing the high-octane offense of Texas A&M. That's what he's saying. He threw a little bit of shade there about LSU's conditioning and very passive-aggressively the DBU remark. Cody, your thoughts on when you hear the Texas A&M quarterback say what he said just now?
I mean, Kellerman can say what he wants because you write your own narrative when it comes to, you know, your future in college football, and especially when it's just the SEC media days, because nobody can outright tell you that you're wrong yet when you look ahead to things. And then this also does fall into lines with, you know, the winners usually get to write the history books. You know what I mean? So,
right.
They did win regardless of how they got there. So he has that ability to be able to look back and say maybe slightly more frivolous things about that ending of that game than you would if you lost the game. You know, if you lose the game, you're not going to say that. My thought is, in that 7 overtime game, I don't remember exactly which overtime it was. Forgive me. There were 7 of them. But there was one overtime. If it didn't happen once, it happened twice, to where LSU intercepted a pass. And then whether it was, you know, they couldn't review it, so they pulled it back, or there was a penalty called that did not look like a penalty at all, which called back the interception. If that is how Kellen Mond is deciding he wants to go with this, saying that the defensive backs aren't that great, or they're not the best in the country at the very least, and that, you know, they were cramping and their conditioning wasn't there, then, dude, you got picked off by those guys, and the refs just took it away. So, like, I don't know what you really point you're making there. Yeah, it sounds good on the surface, but if you dig into his thought process just a little bit, you realize that you're dogging guys who, in reality, in the actual physical part of the game, outplayed you just because of things outside of those defensive backs' control, you still were able to win that game. So just great bulletin board material. And I think to anybody who takes a minute to think about what Kellen Mond said there, those guys, if they were cramping, like he said, and if they're not the best, they still did actually get the better of him, whether or not that was reflected in the final score of the game. So maybe not the smartest thing to say for Kellen Mond there. And that is my level-headed response to a not level-headed comment.
Level-headed response? This is SEC Media Days, Cody Schutz. You know better. You know better. We're here at talking season, the beginning of talking season, and I glance over again and I see more of my my people from the state of Alabama. They're compiling. They're getting together. They're very excited. They're very excited. I can't wait to see what happens.
Probably a few tops popped at 7:15 in the morning, I would imagine, but that's okay. No judgment.
Oh, they got the poster board out there. They're ready. Before we hit a break, Cody, really quick, this is what, you know, based on what happened last year between LSU, Texas A&M, the ending, the scuffle afterwards, and now Kellen Mond saying that he's the best quarterback in the SEC and that LSU was cramping up and that, you know, kind of took a shot at DBU yesterday. Play the clip for me about that he knows, even though he said everything, that he knows that it's going to be crazy in Death Valley come November when Texas A&M faces off at LSU.
I think it kind of, you know, picked up on the so-called rivalry and, you know, that, you know, all the, I guess, drama, you could say, and all the things that went on in that game and close calls. You know, I think it's going to be a crazy game in Death Valley this year.
So you're telling me he does remember the close calls? You're telling me he knows all of this and he still... Oh, my God. We need to stop playing Kellen Mond sound because I'm going to lose my mind. Wow. What a guy. What a guy. That's my QB right there. God.
You're welcome, Cody. And by the way, I already knew what he said there. I just wanted your reaction. We got to hit a break.
That guy's a jabroni.
Got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game, KDS Sports Station, we'll be live from SEC Media Days on Radio Row, and the one and only, my fellow recovering newspaper journalist, the one and only Brett Hudson, will be joining us here to talk all things SEC. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days here in Hoover. And it's our privilege to welcome on friend of the program, a recovering print journalist. He now covers sports for Radio White, in particular Mississippi State. He is a college football junkie, and he's a friend of the program.
It's true.
It's true.
All that is true.
All of that is true. Friend of the program and a college football junkie. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It's Brett, man, how you been, brother?
I'm good, man. It's I don't know how y'all do these mornings all the time. I'm a recovering print journalist, but I'm still a beat writer. So yeah. There's still some morning trade-off there that isn't always my forte. But I got me a turvis full of coffee here, and it's Mississippi State Day, so this is my day, I guess.
Talking, of course, with Brett Hudson of Matt Wyatt Media. Mm-hmm. He covers the Bulldogs of Mississippi State. I like how you said it's Mississippi State Day, because the folks in the lobby right now that are piling up as it is a concert.
You make a good point. It's not Mississippi State Day. It's Nick Saban Day. It's Alabama Day.
Oh,
you make
man.
A good point.
Man, I was warned. I was warned.
Did I just disrespect the Tide? They're going to come to my place and beat me by 60, aren't they? Crap. I need to tell my wife to clean out the living room for when they come to my place and hand me an L. Sorry, I disrespected the Tide. When they win the national title game by 30 points, it's my fault.
It's your fault.
It is my fault.
It's your fault. Brett, day three, obviously Bama. It's Bama. It's going to be Mississippi State, South Carolina today, Arkansas. So, you know, we'll look ahead a little bit on that, but. What are some of your takeaways from the first 2 days here at SEC Media Days?
Well, I was shocked to hear that Kellen Mond thinks he's the best quarterback in the SEC when y'all were mentioning that on the opposite end of the break. We were talking about it off air. I was like, did Tua die? Like, did I? I mean, I went to bed pretty early last night. Did Tua Tagovailoa, like, shockingly die and I not know it? That was pretty shocking. But on the whole, I think it's strange that quarterback, and I hate to be the one that talks about quarterbacks because I'm kind of the opposite way when it gets to Mississippi State, but quarterback is abnormally stable in this conference. I mean, look at the teams that we've had roll through so far. Missouri knows what they're doing. Kelly Bryant, Florida, Felipe Franks, LSU, Joe Burrow, who else? Tennessee, Jarrett Garantano, Texas A&M, Kellen Mond, apparently the best quarterback in the SEC. It's a shockingly stable position for the SEC, and Mississippi State is one of very few outliers to that. I mean, who doesn't know what they're doing at quarterback in the SEC? Mississippi State doesn't. Kentucky doesn't.
Kentucky,
right?
But Ole Miss does.
They have Matt Corral. Vandy doesn't know what they're doing. That's about – in Auburn. That's about it, right?
Right.
It's a pretty stable position in the SEC right now, and we haven't had the usual quarterback storyline suck the air out of the room upstairs in the main media room. So that's been a little different, but I do wonder if that's going to happen today with Mississippi State. But the transfer portal has also been a big topic of conversation.
Every
single coach has been asked about the transfer portal.
Has been asked about the transfer portal.
Every single one.
It's a little exhausting.
Do with that what you will. Do with that what you will. But another interesting topic for Joe Moorhead, considering he's got a transfer quarterback that's trying to win the job. So
we're talking here with Brett Hudson of Matt Wyatt Media, live on Radio Row here at SEC Media Days. One of the things that stood out to me the first couple of days, and I know you cover Mississippi State, but I want to talk a little bit about Ole Miss.
Absolutely.
Matt Luke is I think the jury's going to be out on him. A lot of people feel like he's the transition guy to get them through the NCAA violations, to get them through the NCAA restrictions and everything like that.
In fairness, I do too.
What do you make of he hiring not one but two guys who've been former coach of the years from Power Five conferences to be his coordinators?
Big move for him. Big move. Now the matter is what exactly they do immediately, and if they can help him keep the job long term by staying longer than than we think they will. I think Rich Rod has a little bit of, not a ton, but a little bit of image rehab to do after how things ended at Arizona. So he's one that might see a third season at Ole Miss, for example. Mike McIntyre is a little bit of a different scenario there because Colorado's a tough job. You can't really blame him for things going sideways. It's one of those jobs where you're constantly pushing the boulder uphill. So if your foot slips at least once, it falls back on you and crushes you. So you can't really use that as an indictment of his head coaching ability. So that's probably going to happen for him. But that's what those two hires do for Matt Luke. And I think honestly, the Rich Rod one is more interesting than the Mike McIntyre one, which you wouldn't expect to be the case considering how good Ole Miss has been offensively and just how god-awful they've been defensively. But I think just some structure and some organization can help Ole Miss go from, I think they were like 113th in the nation in yards per play allowed last year. Just some structure and organization, knowing where to line up, where to have their eyes, can push them into the top 100 at least, which isn't a great standard, but it's improvement right. for Ole Miss, right? The offense is where it's really interesting because all of the personnel is new. They lose basically their entire wide receiving corps to the NFL draft last year. They lose their quarterback, Jordan Tamu. They lose several pieces on the offensive line. It's an entirely new set of personnel for Ole Miss offensively. So what does Rich Rod do with some new faces? Talented faces. They recruit very well on the offensive end, but they still got to deploy 11 guys and do so intelligently. So there's got to be kind of a marriage between Rich Rod's true system, the one we've seen at West Virginia and Arizona and Michigan to lesser results, and what he has personnel-wise, because this is an offensive set of personnel that was recruited to air raid, to Phil Longo, to Hugh Freeze, to that kind of a system, and Rich Rod doesn't necessarily own that style of offense. So how those two kind of marry with each other, at least for the first year or two, while Rich Rod and them in theory recruit to this system is an interesting fit for me, especially since we expect defensive improvement just because there's basically nowhere to go but up.
We're talking with Brett Hudson of Matt Wyatt Media here live on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Tell me about the Bulldogs last year. First year for Moorhead, ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Consistency was an issue there. What do you think, as someone who covers this team day in and day out, what are you expecting from them today at Media Day, and what are some of the biggest question marks, I guess, around the Bulldogs?
Well, I think quarterback is going to be the biggest topic of conversation, as I mentioned earlier. It almost always is in situations like this. But the true question for me is wide receiver, because they had statistically, and I don't know how many people really realize this, they had the best defense in America last year. Just run through the statistical case, it's there. Best defense in America last year. They lost almost all of it to the NFL, especially on the defensive line and at safety. So there's going to be some regression there. It's still very talented, but there's going to be some regression there, maybe from number one to maybe somewhere in the top 20, top 25. Your offense has to make up for that, if not improve upon that, to go better than the 8-4 they did in the regular season last year. And quarterback is a part of that, but I think wide receiver is a much bigger issue. They had nothing in terms of big play threats on the perimeter last year. I think the guy that led their team in receiving had something like 270 yards, 250 yards, something like that. That's just something that's never happened to Joe Moorhead, something that shouldn't happen at Mississippi State, and it can't happen this year. So whether it's Osiris Mitchell and Stephen Guidry being a lot better than they've been in the past, or some of the new additions, Javonte Payton out of junior college, Isaiah Zuber, the grad transfer out of Kansas State, they got to have something at wide receiver, and I think that's a much bigger question for Mississippi State in its regular season than quarterback is.
Brett, appreciate you making time for us. As always, enjoy Mississippi State Day, by the way. And
I need to tuck my head down when I walk past the Bama crew over there.
I can help you. I'll serve as a shield.
Thank you.
That way you can get up the escalators.
Thank you.
I appreciate you, Brett.
Happy
Thank
to
you
help,
so
guys.
Much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days, live from Radio Row. All of our exclusive content is also available on 1037thegame.com, and all of it is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. It's time now for us to welcome on our next guest. He is the CEO and president of Peach Bowl Incorporated, a position he's held since 1998. He was also instrumental in getting the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. And he's also excited about this year's Chick-fil-A kickoff game that pits Duke versus Alabama, which will be on Saturday, August the 31st. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Gary P. Stokin. Mr. Stokin, how you doing this morning?
RP3, I like that. How you doing today?
Doing great. RP3 is a great way of not having to say Raymond Anton Parch the III over and over again. Mr. Stokin, let's start off with just the excitement level for you being here, taking part once again in SEC Media Days.
Well, what's great about this weekend is you know that college football is not too far off when you have Media Days. So, you know, we'll be traveling here, and then we go up to the ACC this afternoon, and then we'll go to the Big Ten on Friday, and then next week the Pac-12, partly because building relationships to get people to play in our kickoff game, Chick-fil-A right. kickoff game, but also, you know, we host the semifinal this year in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So we either have number one against number four or number two against number three on December 28th in the CFP semifinal game.
We're talking with Gary Stokin, CEO and president of the Peach Bowl Incorporation here, right here on RP3 and Company. Mr. Stokin, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, you've been in charge. You were instrumental in having the Peach Bowl be part of that New Year's Day 6 collective. You know, they rotate the sites for the semifinals, everything like that. Walk me back through that. What was your efforts, and how far out did you start laying the groundwork for the Peach Bowl to be part of that mix?
Well, that's an interesting story. In 2006, we had made a bid to join the BCS, which was obviously the predecessor of the CFP, and we didn't get in because the Rose, Sugar, Orange, and Fiesta double-hosted their bowl and the national championship game. So we lost the bid for the national championship game. However, the NCAA legislated a 12th game to the schedule in 2007. So in 2008, I said, well, if they're not going to let us in the BCS on the backside, we're going to start the BCS on the front side. And we started the Chick-fil-A kickoff game. And we had Clemson, who was number 9. Alabama was number 24. Alabama, Nick Saban's second season, he was 7-6 the first year, came in, upset Clemson, number 9. And if Nick were sitting here, he would tell you that was the start of their dynasty, is winning that 2008 Chick-fil-A kickoff game. So that was one of the things. Starting the kickoff game, I think the commissioners looked at that and gave us a lot of credit for giving back to college football and changing college football on the front side of the season. Secondly, I think we brought the College Football Hall of Fame to Atlanta. I think they saw that. We put $13 million into that building. We ran the architecture and equipment, and so I think they saw, again, we're giving back to college football. And then we had sold out 18 straight years with our Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl with the ACC and the SEC. So that, we had Mercedes-Benz coming on line, and I think all that put together was the recipe of success to join the New Year's Six bowl games.
We're talking here with Gary Stokin of the Peach Bowl. Gary, I remember the first kickoff. I remember that Clemson-Alabama game. And that served as kind of the template for everyone else. All of a sudden, you started seeing these neutral site games in the first week of the season, Houston, Dallas at Jerry World, Houston there at what used to be NRG Reliant, across the country. And you guys kind of, and now even Orlando's in the mix.
Charlotte's got one as well now.
Charlotte's got one as well. How much pride do you take in kind of being like, okay, well, we can't get onto the back end, like you said. We're going to do something special on the front. Not to mention, it also gives teams from the SEC and from the ACC a great non-conference game that's going to have a big television audience as well. How much pride do you take in that kind of being at the forefront of that?
Well, definitely it's something that, you know, I personally like the challenge of creating something new and, you know, really being on the innovative side of college football. And we've tried to do that with the kickoff game and what we've done with the Hall of Fame as well. So it's very rewarding. It's a great testament to our staff who does all the work and does a great job, to our volunteers who are fantastic in Atlanta, and really the corporate community of Atlanta who supports us, like Chick-fil-A, Kia, Delta, Coca-Cola, you know, Home Depot. We've got some great headquarter companies in Atlanta that really get sports and have been great partners, particularly Chick-fil-A, who sponsors not only our golf tournament but also our kickoff game and our bowl game.
Gary, I want to ask you something. You know, I know your past experience as president of the Atlanta Sports Council, you helped create things. It helped make Atlanta an event for NCAA Final Four, All-Star Games, both for Major League Baseball and the NHL, Women's Final Four, NBA All-Star Games, because you understand what that does. Having those big marquee events is great for the infrastructure, and it's great for the local economy. And you brought that, and obviously you brought that experience with you in your role with the Peach Bowl. How important is an event like the one we're at right now? SEC Media Days is going back to Atlanta. It was there last year for the first time outside of the state of Alabama. It's going back again next year. How important is it to have an event like this in a city like Atlanta or any city, Nashville, in the years to come?
Yeah, sports business is a huge economic impact for a city. And so, you know, I kind of look at it like the MasterCard commercial, right? Okay. It costs X to get the event. The exposure that you get from an event like Radio Row and all the media, ESPN, CBS, coming to Atlanta next year for Media Days, for the SEC Media Days, that's priceless. You can't put a price on all of the people coming in, talking about Atlanta, being in Atlanta, promoting Atlanta. The city of Atlanta doesn't have a budget for that,
right?
Because they couldn't pay for it. It's, you know, we have a Final Four this year. We have the national semifinal this year. Those are going to get ratings of, you know, 19, 20 million people around the country. You know, there's not anything that the city of Atlanta could do that can get that kind of draw on national TV. So sporting events are great economic impact, where you get sales tax from all the people coming in, traveling in, whether it's rental cars, hotels, restaurants, etc. But the byproduct of having all the media that you don't have to pay for is priceless.
How much different, and we're talking with Gary Sokin of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, how much different is it when you guys put on the kickoff game at the beginning of the year, a regular edition of the Peach Bowl, and a national semifinal? Is there a vast amount of difference there in the preparation?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, the kickoff game is really just an away game for the teams. So they'll come in Friday. We invite them to come to the College Football Hall of Fame,
okay,
so the players can aspire, because somebody on that team may be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 10 or 15 years. So we want them to aspire to get in that Hall of Fame. So we take the players through there, and then they play the next day, and then they're out of town. Where a bowl game, you have the team in town for all week.
Okay.
And so you're putting on events every day, two and three events a day, and meals, et cetera. So a bowl game is much more involved. And then you ratchet it up when you get to semifinals, because obviously, you have, like this year, we'll take the College Football Hall of Fame and close it down and convert it so that we can have media day for both teams in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's different with each, you know, step, with a kickoff game, a New Year's Six bowl game, and then a semifinal game. It's a little bit different each time for our staff and our volunteers.
Gary, how do you feel about how SEC Media Days went last year in Atlanta there at the College Football Hall of Fame? I know you were part of making that happen. And what can you guys improve on from last year for next year's SEC Media Days when it returns?
Yeah, one of the things that we've suggested to the SEC, now it's their show, so
right,
you know, we're just the host in Atlanta, but we've suggested the Radio Row be in the Hall of Fame itself.
Thank you for that.
Because it was in the hotel last year, so obviously that's the SEC's decision, but, you know, we'd like to see the Radio Row move into there. I think, you know, the Hall of Fame works so well that that's why they want to come back, and Atlanta's easy to get to for a lot of the SEC media,
right,
whether you're flying in, driving in, etc. So, and it's a big media market, and they want the media, obviously, to come out. All the Atlanta stations, etc., will be there. So, yeah, we're looking forward to hosting it, and hopefully we can get it back after that on a consistent basis as well.
Wrapping things up here with Gary Sokin of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Mr. Gary, where do you see the enthusiasm for college football? It just keeps growing. It just keeps building and building. You have the neutral site games. You have the college football playoff. Is in the future, do you see the college football playoff possibly expanding, even adding more games? Is that something that you can see realistically moving forward?
Yeah, I think in 2023, probably around there, the commissioners and the presidents of the universities are going to have to, you know, sit down and make some decisions. I hope they don't expand, because I think the regular season of college football is the best of any sport. Every game matters. And, you know, when you see basketball expand, now all of a sudden the ACC tournament or SEC tournament doesn't mean as much, because there's eight teams that are already going to get into the NCAA tournament. Where in college football, our first game, last year we had Auburn and Washington, number 6 and number 9. Well, that was the most important game of the season, because, you know, you can win or lose your conference. But if you win your conference and beat a number 6, or in Auburn's case beat, you know, or Washington's case beat a number 9, and you win your conference, you've just punched your ticket to the playoff, right? So I think the regular season matters. If you have an expanded playoff, the regular season takes a dip. That hurts the regular season conference TV package, which is the commissioner's main revenue stream. And so I don't think they want to hurt that. They also don't want to hurt their regular season ticket packages. And if people start to say, well, I'll wait till the playoff before I buy a ticket or watch the games, that's going to hurt. Attendance is going to hurt their TV package, and I don't think they want to risk that.
Mr. Gary, I appreciate you making time for us. I know you're busy. I know you got a lot of places to go, ACC and Big Ten media days as well. But I appreciate you taking the time out, and best of luck with the kickoff game between Duke and Alabama on Saturday, August 31st. And best of luck with hosting the college football semifinal later this year.
Thanks, RP3. Have a great football season.
You too. Gary Stokin, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl president and CEO, joining us here live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. We got to hit a break, but we'll wrap up hour number two right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days in Hoover. As you can hear in the background, someone decided to walk through the lobby, and that got everyone's attention, because the Alabama contingent, the Roll Tide Roll, is in the lobby, and they're raring to go.
So you're saying, like, what, Greg McElroy rolled through or something like that? Is that?
No, I think it was a sense of false excitement, because someone walked in, and then they were like, oh, no, we're not excited about
it. Just another old short guy.
But let's wrap up our number two, talking a little Houston Astros baseball. The second half of the season has not started off like they were hoping it would. They began with a four-game series at the Texas Rangers, dropped the first two games, needed extras to win the third game of that series, then won the fourth game in convincing fashion, Altuve with the big grand slam. And they split, and you're like, okay, well, now they're rocking and rolling. Now they're going. Well, the problem is they've dropped the first two games of this series with the Los Angeles Angels. Last night they fell 7-2. Now they're still 59-37 overall. They're still in first place there in the American League West, but they're having some issues. And last night was that. They just couldn't score runs. They got plenty of hits. They had 13 hits. They out-hit the Angels 13-9 last night and still lost 7-2. I mean, just look at the box score. Altuve, 2-for-5. Bregman, 1-for-3, drew 2 walks. Brantley, 2-for-5. Gurriel, 3-for-5. Tyler White even had a good game, 3-for-5. Mrazek, 2-for-5. But the pitching was not great. Hector Rondon got the start. He only lasted 2/3 of an inning. Gave up 6 runs on 5 hits. Boom. Right off the bat. They gave the Angels 6 runs in the bottom of the first, and that's pretty much all she wrote. They take out Rondon, who was just awful. Once again, 2/3 innings of work, 6 runs on 5 hits. Then Vinsky comes in. He kind of stops the bleeding for a few, for a little over an inning. And then the rest of the way, they were fine. Will Harris, former LSU star, got in there, pitched a clean inning. But they fall 7-2. They're still 59-37 overall. They're still in first place, but they got some issues here, especially with healthy lineup, with Springer back in the lineup, Altuve, they have Bregman, they have Brantley. They're getting the hits. They just didn't score enough runs yesterday, and there's some issues with the pitching, which once again just brings to the forefront the need and the desire of them to go out and get themselves another veteran arm to add to the rotation with Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Wade Miley. They need another guy, especially with Peacock being still dealing with that arm soreness. If you want to listen to the Houston Astros, and we know you do because 103.7 The Game is the home for the Houston Astros, well, guess what? You're in luck. They are on tonight. Let me give you the rundown. Bumper Bumper Sports. Sorry. First of all, it'll be Uncle Jordy, Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4. Then Bumper to Bumper Sports with the good brother Ben Love from 4 to 6. And then it'll be Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. That'll be from 6 to 8. You can catch up with Don Allen, Glenn Quibodeau, Bobby Ardwan, Bruce Brown, Tom Brown. Catch up with the guys. Then after that, at 8:35, it'll be pregame. Astro launch, first pitch then will be at 9:07. Astros at Angels, game three of this four-game set on the road there in Los Angeles. Cody, we have not played this game in a while.
Yay!
But I do believe it's time for us to play one of our favorites.
Yes. RP3, come on down. It's time to find out how many games in first place are the Houston Astros. Yes, your Houston Astros are in first place in the American League West. But I want to know, by how many games closest without going over wins? And I will give you, I always give you a little extra tidbit of information.
Okay.
The second place team has changed. It is
no longer Texas.
It is no longer the Rangers. Second place in the AOS goes to Oakland. Yes.
Yeah.
But
the Astros always do that.
The Astros are still on top. We'll put 60 seconds on the clock, Raymond.
Oh.
How many games in first place are the Astros?
Well, they've started off the second half of the season losing 4 of 6.
No bueno.
And if the Rangers have fallen out of second place in the American League West, and the A's are there, that means they are surging while the Astros are falling. I'm going to guess that the Astros lead in the American League West as it stands right now, 4.5 games.
I really need to get a buzzer. I believe this is the second time in a row you've got it absolutely correct.
No,
the
really?
Astros are 59-37 overall. The Athletics are 54-41. That's a 4.5 game lead for the Astros in the AL West. Well done, Raymond. You get nothing.
I get nothing. I'm allowed to continue to being on the air because you're the producer. That's my award. Hour two in the books. Hour three, RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, live from SEC Media Days. Coming up next.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day, seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row right here at SEC Media Days. Our continued coverage of SEC Media Days live from Radio Row, as well as all the exclusive content available on 103.7thegame.com. That includes stories, video recaps, video interviews. You can find it all right there on our homepage. It's all proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's Arco Equipment. If you'd like to, you can go check out everything that we have on 1037thegame.com. Like I said, we have multiple stories about all the teams that have come through here, not only LSU, but also Georgia, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Missouri. We have a story on there about Commissioner Greg Sankey as well. We have daily video recaps and much more. So, by all means, please go check that out at 1037thegame.com. We are currently waiting on our good friend Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. He is coming to join us. He's just running a few minutes behind. Probably got caught behind the contingent of Alabama fans that have now flooded the entire lobby of the Hyatt Regency Hotel. SEC Media Days, day three. It's Alabama Day, obviously, but it's also Mississippi State. We had our good friend Brett Hudson on to give us a little bit of insight about the Bulldogs. So today, coming up today, it's Bama, it's Arkansas in the morning session. Afternoon is going to be Mississippi State, South Carolina. So that's your lineup for today here at SEC Media Days. And we'll have plenty of that coverage for you throughout the day on 1037thegame.com. Now, Cody, we're in hour number three. You've had some time to relax and to kind of breathe. Now, I know you practice your breathing exercises outside during some of the commercial breaks. So have you calmed down about Kellen Mond, Texas A&M quarterback, and the things that he said yesterday during SEC Media Days?
I mean, have I calmed down? Yes, I guess. I've calmed down from my feelings on those statements, but does that make my opinion that those statements are absolutely ridiculous any less? No. Kellen Mond, I just listened back to it, actually, here during the break, and he even says specifically in his statement there that he could come out here and just say that, but that's not what he's doing. He truly believes that. So not only did he come out there and give you what you expect from a quarterback, because what do you want the guy to come out there and say? You know, that, no, okay, I'm not the best. I suck. You know, we got to make up for my lack of playing in other spots. You don't expect him to come out and say that. But, you also don't expect a guy to double down like Kellen Mond did, not just saying that he thinks he's the best quarterback, but then saying that he truly believes that. And, you know, he even says, that's not just me being a confident guy. I truly believe I'm the best quarterback in the SEC. And I understand you have to have that confidence, but there's also, you know, some naivete that could go along with that, too. And maybe Kellen Mond enjoys living in his ignorant bliss there with Texas A&M. I don't know, but good for him. You know, I like the confidence. I agree with you. The confidence I want. I don't want Joe Burrow going out there and saying, you know, I would love to hear Joe Burrow say, I'm the best quarterback in the SEC. But do it with a little less pomp, if you will, and more, this is just me being a confident player and believing in my abilities, not downing all the other quarterbacks in the SEC.
What is more egregious for you, Cody Schutz, producer extraordinaire, back there in the lovely 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing? Is it the fact that he said that he's the best quarterback in the SEC, or is it the fact that he threw shade at your Tigers, saying that they were cramping up and made a slight reference to DBU?
The latter upsets me more, if you're asking directly. Just because Kellen Mond, I mean, to call out the other guys and say that they were cramping up during a 7 overtime game, and that, like you said earlier, that is obviously saying that LSU wasn't as in shape as I was or as my team was. There's a way you can go about doing that. And again, I have to look at this way, because I've talked enough sports into this microphone now that I catch myself when I you know, hypocritic, or I talk on both sides of a coin here. And I don't want to do that, because if LSU had won that game and then Joe Burrow came out and was like, oh boy, we whipped up on Texas A&M, they weren't very good, I don't want to sit here and say that I would hound Joe Burrow for that, because I wouldn't. But what I would hope Joe Burrow would have done is not made it, you know, want this one specific thing, you know, and then call out this, where the specific thing in this case is saying that they're cramping, saying, okay, oh man, we got LSU beat in conditioning, that's why we won that game. And then to turn around and say after that, that, and like DBU, and I can imagine the little smirk on his face when he said it, I want and I love my quarterback to come out and be confident and maybe take a shot at other teams here and there. But Kellen Mond did it with, what's the word I'm looking for? So much just, I mean, he was pompous when he did it. I can't think of another word to use to describe how he came about or how he went about saying these things about LSU and their defense and stuff. And then when you think even more specifically about the way the game went down, and then he mentions the couple of close calls that happened, and he knows that at the end of the day, if one referee decides to make a call a slightly different way, then the game doesn't go his way, and he can't be saying any of this. It's just when you add all of those things together, that's, I think, what gets me mad, and which is why I can ramble about it for about five straight minutes without taking a breath. I'm going to breathe now.
Well, Cody, this is a good opportunity. I'm glad that we did not bring you to SEC Media Days, because I feel like you may have lost your composure.
Gone all Seth Rollins and burn it down.
Oh, well, we got to hit a break, because when we come back, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, is here. He's going to join us live on Radio Row from SEC Media Days. I'm glad he made it. There was some concern there that he could not get through the crowd of people that have collected at the entrance of the Hyatt Regency Hotel. And yes, surprise, surprise, they're Alabama fans. We'll talk all about that and much, much more with Connor O'Gara right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at SEC Media Days at the Hyatt Regency in Hoover, Alabama. It's time now for us to welcome on our next guest. He joins us on a regular basis. He's one of the best in the business. Senior national columnist for SaturdayDownSouth.com, as well as SaturdayTradition.com. He's also the co-host of the Saturday Down South podcast. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. First time doing this in person. Good to be here.
It is good to be here. I'm glad that you're here, man. A lot of topics to get to. So I want to start off first and foremost. I want to talk a little Texas A&M because they were definitely the most buzzed about team yesterday, and that includes having Georgia in the building, a team that's a perennial national title contender. But Texas A&M kind of stole the show on day two at the very end. You know, we got the Jimbo, we got the dang gums and everything like that, the folksiness that's become kind of Jimbo's trademark. My first question to you, Jimbo's kind of a character in a lot of ways. This conference and this media days needs someone like Jimbo Fisher.
I think so. I think that he belongs here. It's strange to think that Jimbo, I mean, he talked about it. He's split time in the ACC and in the SEC, but he feels more like an SEC guy. I mean, just the kind of the bravado that he brings, and the fact that he's dropping y'all and howdy and daggum in the first sentence, basically, that he said, the first very long run.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's all part of his whole shtick and what he does. And, you know, I think that Jimbo is in a very interesting position in year two, because usually we look at these coaches who, these splashy hires, and we say, all right, year two, the year two jump. We've talked about it with a lot of different programs, and even like somebody like Kirby Smart, who comes in and has the year that he did in the second year that he was at Georgia. And I don't know if it's really like that with Jimbo, though, because I think a lot of people wonder if that team last year overachieved a touch. And this year, with the schedule being what it is, which is arguably the most daunting schedule in the country, I think people look at this and they're kind of trying to figure him out, and that's why you're going to see win projections all over the place a bit. I mean, the over-under in Vegas is 7.5 with this team. You look at Jimbo Fisher, you look at Kellen Mond, and it does not seem like that.
They do not carry themselves as a team that's going to be a 7-win team. And Jimbo's comments yesterday, when someone asked him essentially about being a spoiler because of the schedule, they have to play Clemson once again. They have to play Bama. They have to play Georgia, and they have to play LSU. I mean, those are four teams that are going to be in the top 10. And he shut that down, Connor. He was like, no, no, no. He was almost offended that someone would consider them to be a spoiler. He views his team and his program as contenders, and anything else is going to be unacceptable.
Yeah, and I get that, because I think they've actually played pretty well, all things considered, against Bama the last 2 years. People might forget that Kellen Mond actually played pretty well as a freshman against them 2 years ago. And then I think last year what A&M did against Clemson just gave them so much confidence. I mean, that was a game where, you know, you look at the way that everything turned out for Clemson, and I would argue that if Clemson had just had Trevor Lawrence starting from start to finish in that game, I think it might have had a little bit of a different outcome. But at the same time, you know, that gave A&M so much confidence to say, hey, look, we can compete with anybody in the country. We are ready to do this. We're a 9-win team. We just dominated a bowl game, and we're feeling good about ourselves. But at the same time, I wonder if that roster is really at that level yet. I mean, they have holes. They have obvious holes. When you have to replace somebody like Trayvon Williams, who even Jimbo said, like, the guy was third in the nation in rushing last year. He was one of the most underrated rushing seasons that we've seen in the SEC, at least in recent memory. And just replacing a guy like him, that's not an easy thing to do. And I don't think it's a given that they're going to be able to do it with Jayshon Corbin. So I think that you look at this team and you try and figure out what is their year two, what is their path. And I think it could be all over the place. Maybe they have an LSU-like season, where LSU last year, everybody's talking about, you know, low expectations because of the schedule, this and that. At Odron, you know, we shouldn't raise our expectations for him. But, you know, A&M could easily surprise people, and there are a lot of good opportunities for marquee wins because everybody seems to be kind of putting them in that second class right now. But they can do a lot of damage with that schedule, and even an 8-win or a 9-win season could still go a long way.
We're talking with Connor O'Gear of Saturday Down South. He's joining us live here from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. We've talked about it before on the program, Connor. That LSU game between LSU and Texas A&M last year was epic. 7 overtimes. Everything ends at the end with scuffles, with assistant coaches, and everything like that. A lot of bad blood. Obviously, Jimbo was a former assistant at LSU. Joe Oliva tried to unsuccessfully hire him twice to replace Les Miles. Is this going to be the new rivalry to define the SEC, much like LSU and Alabama has been for the last decade?
I don't know if it's going to be quite on that level, but it's definitely a rivalry that's forming that got a lot more interesting last year with A&M finally winning. And you could argue whether or not that should happen because, they got about 3 extra chances, but it does kind of feel like that, at least from the A&M side, where, you know, we look at these teams when they with all the realignment stuff and how they're going to fit in, and, you know, you really don't fit in until you have a rival, I think. And I think A&M finally is starting to get that with LSU, because anytime A&M and LSU, you know, that conversation would come up on social media, all LSU players would have to say is, oh, well, you know, win one against us and then we'll talk. And for them to finally get over that hump last year in the fashion that they did, I think that changes things. I think it will be exciting because I'm a big believer in LSU's future. I think that, you know, it wouldn't stun me in the next 5 years if we're talking about an LSU national championship, because this is a team that's recruited extremely well. And the same thing with A&M. I think that Jimbo, that's the standard that he has raised this team to, you know, if you're going to make a $75 million investment and you're going to go all in with this type of recruiting, I think that there is obviously some, you know, those expectations are going to continue to rise. And I think that over the next 5 years, it's going to be fascinating to watch these two programs go back and forth. Maybe not quite Bama-LSU, but I think it is going to be one of the top couple rivalries in the SEC.
We're talking with Connor O'Gear here live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. And there's a bevy of cameras around us, and obviously they're here for Connor and not for the Alabama player that's being interviewed at our table, at the table next to us.
Oh, Jerry Judy's over here.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, Jerry's here, and there's about 12 TV cameras around him. They're here for you, Connor. That's what we're going to go with.
Appreciate that.
Your thoughts on what you heard and your interactions with LSU on Monday?
Yeah, so I'm always the biggest Joe Burrow supporter. I think I'm even more of a bigger Joe Burrow supporter. I think that just the confidence that he has. We talked about it with Kellen Mond, but Joe Burrow just I love the comment when, you know, I ask him something like, hey, you know, against A&M you run the ball like 25 times. You know, you've had other times where you that's just not a part of your game at all. And obviously we think the offense is going to be drastically different this year with the RPOs and all that. But I ask him, I'm like, you know, like, what do you like doing? Like, what do you feel like is in your skill set, your wheelhouse? He's like, I don't really care. I just want to win. I'll do whatever it takes. And that's kind of what that A&M game showed, and that he really wanted to sort of will that team to victory. And he just doesn't care. And I love the comment from Coach O about he'll run. If we let him, he would run through a brick wall for us. I believe that 100%. Joe Burrow has done everything that you have asked him to do since the moment he stepped on campus. He's been treating this like a true professional, like it's his job. And I love the approach that he still has with this whole thing. I think that he has that locker room in a way that maybe LSU quarterbacks in the past have not had. And I think that LSU is in such good shape with him. I took a lot of flack for saying that I think he's the number four quarterback in the SEC. And I think he's got number three upside because I think he could potentially pass Kellen Mond. I think that he is that good. And I think that he's somebody who is obviously, you know, has become such a great character in the SEC. He belongs in the SEC, I think. And, you know, go figure that a year ago he wasn't even a member of LSU and we were still trying to he wasn't even a part of this team, you know, come media days. We're still trying to figure out where this whole thing was going, but it's been fascinating to see his rise, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in 2019.
Connor, is LSU, are they the team, the dark horse team that could upset Alabama and or stop Alabama and Georgia's stranglehold on the SEC, the conference in general?
If I had to put a bet on one, it's still LSU, and I understand the streak is what it is, but like let's not forget this is an LSU team that it could start off as a top five team in the country. I don't think that's crazy. I think they have the best secondary in the country. I think their receivers are absolutely loaded. What Justin Jefferson is a bona fide number one receiver. I think, you know, as we talked about with Joe Burrow, this is a group that I think could be a top 20 offense this year. And I think that if we're talking about Joe Brady at season's end and the impact that he's had as one of the top big impact hires across college football, that's a very good sign for this team. I don't think they beat Alabama this year because you look at the talent that team returns offensively, and that's just absurd. That's the best matchup in the SEC this year, the Bama receivers against that LSU secondary. But if there was a team that in the next few years can sort of get into that mix and just break into break up the monotony. It's almost like Lakers Celtics in the 80s and like the Pistons were the team that could just sort of break through and have this nice little 2-year window. LSU is that team for me because I think they're extremely well coached. As long as they can keep Dave Aranda around, I think that bodes really well for them, and I think LSU isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Talking with Connor O'Gara of SaturdayDownSouth.com, joining us here live from Radio Row of SEC Media Days. Let's talk about, as our listeners back in Acadiana and throughout Louisiana refer to as the Red Menace, Alabama. Saban does something better than probably any other coach in the country, where he takes an embarrassing loss, a disappointing loss, and he uses that as fuel. He just uses that to work his guys even harder, and they buy in, and then they come out. And if you look at the record, he dominates. Is that the expectation that what happened, the embarrassment that happened against Clemson in the national championship game, are we going to see an even angrier, even more focused, intense Alabama team this year, in your opinion?
I tend to think that, and I'm of the belief that the revenge angle is absolutely there. I mean, the numbers, the five teams that he's returned coming off of a bowl game loss, four of them have won national championships. I mean, the numbers are insane. It's like 29-4 against top 25 teams. I think 36-4 against the SEC or something like that, like 66-9 overall. I don't remember what it is exactly. I tweeted out the stat a couple of weeks ago, but it's insane what he's able to do in these revenge-type seasons. That's going to be the narrative this entire year. But my question is, 44-16 is not, oh, Deshaun Watson had one great moment at the end of this national championship. 44-16 is, do we have to rethink how we're doing this? Do we have to rethink the way that we coach our defense? Do we have to rethink the way that we try and establish balance on offense? Do we have to rethink everything that has made us so great? Probably not, because you're still a team that's been to four straight national championships. But at the same time, 44-16 is loud, and it makes a lasting impression with somebody like Nick Saban that, you know, we saw with some of the coaching staff turnover, and, you know, maybe some of that was because of the way that that game was played out. It just felt like Alabama was not prepared the way that Clemson was. I tend to think that we will see revenge Saban this year. I'd have a tough time believing that this is just going to, you know, carry over and there's going to be some sort of hangover. I think revenge as opposed to hangover is going to be a word that we hear way, way more with this Alabama team.
Wrapping things up here with Connor O'Gara of SaturdayDownSouth.com. Connor, we both took part in an event, a very cool event last night, held at a historic theater in Birmingham. Briefly, tell us, you know, what were your thoughts about the SEC's new television program that's going to be coming out later this year, Saturdays in the South? We got to see Herschel Walker, Steve Spurrier, and Archie Manning do a roundtable discussion. Saw some clips last night at the theater. What did you think about that?
It was awesome. I mean, as somebody who did not grow up in the South, I wasn't raised on this. So, you know, I've seen the Bill Bates clip about 10,000 times by now because that's just kind of the baptism that you get in the SEC. But at the same time, I love it. I'm looking forward to it. I really didn't know what to expect as much, but I thought it was tremendous just to see those guys sitting up there, and you're just surrounded by greatness the entire time. It was so cool to watch Steve Spurrier relive some of these great moments and to see all these, you know, even the stuff about, like, Archie Manning and his dad and, like, walking down as, like, his dad after he committed suicide. Like, just some great detail that they're going to get to go into with this series. And I think that it's going to be a staple for SEC fans. I'm looking forward to having that, you know, fill my DVR and getting to burn through it. You know, maybe I'll just save it till the offseason when we're looking for stuff to watch. And that'll just, you know, be a nice little 8-hour, you know, 12-hour window, whatever it is, to be able to go back to.
Connor, appreciate you coming on, brother. Enjoy the rest of Media Days, my friend.
Appreciate it. You too.
You're listening to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, live from SEC Media Days. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days on Radio Row. Once again, our continued coverage from SEC Media Days on Radio Row, as well as all of the exclusive content available at 1037thegame.com, is proudly presented by the pros at Arco Equipment. When the only road is no road, it's Arco Equipment. It's time now to welcome on yet another guest. He is the first executive director of the College Football Playoff. He's also the first full-time director of the NCAA Final Four. It's the one and only Mr. Bill Hancock joins us here. Mr. Hancock, thank you for making time for us today.
Raymond, thank you for having me on. I'm going to start off with a question. Are y'all Astros country? Are there Braves fans in your neck of the woods? Give me the lay of the land.
There are Braves fans in our neck of the woods. You're actually speaking to one right now. but we are the home of the Houston Astros. Our station is for all of Acadiana. So, yes, cool. Big Astros country in our neck of the woods.
Excellent. I grew up as an Astros fan in Oklahoma. Back then, the Astros were all we had. That was before the Rangers. So we had to be Astros fans. It was Astros or Cardinals for us back then, and I chose Astros.
Not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. One of the best teams, and they've definitely built something special over there in Houston with the World Series championship 2 seasons ago. Mr. Hancock, let's talk a little bit about the College Football Playoff. We're now in it for a few seasons. How do you feel everything has gone with the College Football Playoff? Has it exceeded your own expectations on what it was intended to be? And do you believe it's living up to those expectations?
It is, Raymond. It's been very successful. We had high expectations, although we didn't really know what to expect. But the fans love it. Coaches are fond of it, and it's been great for college football. So the College Football Playoff is really a splendid event.
We're on with Bill Hancock. He is the executive director of the College Football Playoff. It's gone extremely well. You guys have done some tweaks to the schedule when the semifinals are going to be. I know that's happened, and it seems like you guys are making good adjustments as we progress. The main thing that everyone continues to ask, and there's a section of the population that keeps pushing this about the expansion. It needs to expand. What do you say to those people that say, hey, you need to go from 4 teams to 6 or 8?
I would say to them that the College Football Playoff works. But as responsible managers, we have an obligation to see if we can do something to make the event better, whatever that may be. And so our group will be talking about the format. And when I say our group, I mean the university presidents and the conference commissioners who manage the CFP. We'll be talking about the future. So it works, but we'll be talking.
We're talking with Bill Hancock. He's the executive director of the College Football Playoff right here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Mr. Hancock, the playoff is set. You guys have the sites where the semifinals are going to be, and then you have your championship. What's been the reaction from those communities? I had the CEO and president of the Peach Bowl on earlier, and he's over the moon thrilled because they couldn't get into the BCS mix, and they started the neutral site games early on at the beginning of the season, but now they're part of the mix of the College Football Playoff. They host the semifinals this year. Has having the semifinals like we have it and everything like that, has that expanded to the other cities? How good is that to have that expansion to like places like Atlanta or Dallas, Arlington and everything like that, and have the championship games there and the semifinals games there every few years?
It's been great for those cities. You know, there's six bowls as a part of the semifinal rotation. So Atlanta has a semifinals once every 3 years. Atlanta and Dallas were not a part of the BCS, as you remember.
Right.
And so when we decided to go to six cities, we reached out to those two, and both were very eager to join us. They gave up a little bit. What those two cities gave up was the opportunity to choose their participants in their game.
Okay.
Because the selection committee assigns the teams to their game. But they gained so much more. They gained the opportunity to have the semifinals, as Gary told you this morning. And they gained just an elevated status, I think, in the world of, I think they would say, in the world of college football. The championship game site selection has been also fun and interesting. We decided we wanted to move the championship game around to places that hadn't had it before, so that championship college football is a treasure in this country, and we need to make it available to as many fans as we can. So it turned out that in the first 10 years of the playoff, all 10 years or seasons of the champ game will be played in a different city. We like that. This year we go to New Orleans, of course.
Right.
And New Orleans is such a great destination city. We'll do terrific there. And then after that, Miami, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, and then Houston. We're going to the new Rams Stadium in Los Angeles. I think that'll be a treat for the athletes who get to play there. It's sometimes lost on the fans, but it's not lost on us how much the players enjoy playing in a facility like, well, like Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
Right.
You know, one of the best stadiums in the world. And these are impressionable college students, and they'd love to go play at a place like that.
We're talking with Executive Director of the College Football Playoff. Mr. Bill Hancock is joining us here live on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. What are some things that you and your staff are trying to do to improve the College Football Playoff? I mean, obviously, it's a resounding success. The ratings are there. The attendance is there. The economic impact on all the cities from the semifinals up to the championship game is there. But knowing your career, I take it that you guys are always trying to tweak things. You're always trying to make things more impactful, better. What are some of those things that you guys are trying to work on?
Each year during the off season, starting in about February, we do a complete evaluation of everything from the selection committee down to the national anthem singer at the championship game. So that's, frankly, the most fun time of the year for me. I think we have to be our own harshest critics. And as I said a minute ago, we have to, as a part of being responsible managers, we have an obligation to see what we can do to make things better. An example of that was when we moved the semifinals away from New Year's Eve. You know, we tried to do something special on New Year's Eve. We thought it would be a great package, but we learned that many fans are unable to watch games on New Year's Eve. So we made a pretty quick decision that we were going to move away from New Year's Eve with the semifinals and move them back to Saturday. That resulted in an interesting thing this year. There are 16 game days between the semifinals and the championship game. And that came up, and usually they're about 9 days.
Okay.
And that came about as a result of the change away from New Year's Eve. I think the coaches will like that. I think they'll appreciate the opportunity to have their kids get their legs back and get some bruises healed up. I think it'll be fine for fans, too. So we're looking at that's just an example of one of the kinds of changes we've made. But we've kept the protocol for the committee the same. The committee looks at its own protocol during the off season, and they came back and said, we like this. We like the way this is working. So you try to make improvements, but you also don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I like that. Talking to the executive director of the College Football Playoff, Bill Hancock. Mr. Hancock, for some people, there seems to be a little bit of fatigue with Bama, Clemson. They've kind of dominated the sport. These things go in cycles, though. As you know from your time, even with the BCS and your time in college athletics, there's always lulls, and programs always go down. It wasn't that long ago that the Crimson Tide were not a very good program. It wasn't that long ago that Clemson was a mediocre program. So these things go in cycle. How do you and the people that make up the College Football Playoff Committee that have to make those tough decisions to put the four best teams in, how do you not let outside fatigue, outside influence make an impact when you guys have to make those decisions?
You stay with the discipline of the protocol and the discipline of the process, and you remind the committee that all we have to do is evaluate these 12 games or 13 games during this season. And that's really not hard. The committee's people are people of high integrity, and they get it. And they don't want to think about the brand or think about what happened last year. It's all about just looking at side-by-side, at game-by-game results from each team.
So it just boils down to that. It's just don't – you basically have the mindset and you instruct the committee, take away the decal on the helmet or whatever, the patch that's on the jersey. Just remove that. It's not about tradition. It's not about ratings or anything like that. The initiative by the committee is you got to pick the best four teams.
That's it. And we have so many details to review, statistics, game-by-game results, head-to-head, common opponents. There's so many things to review that really anything else is sort of like forced out of their brain, and they focus on the information that's right in front of them.
I have to ask you, though, because I just have to. Over the course of the past few years, has it got a little fiery in there? Do things get heated with people kind of voicing their opinions and their viewpoints and their stands?
It does, Raymond, it does. Not unprofessionally.
Right.
But there are pointed discussions. And you will see two people disagree on a certain team, and then in the next round of voting, you will see those same two people agree on some other team. And this is because we have intelligent people who work collegially together, but they know the goal is to get the best two teams, and we encourage them to say what's on their mind. The committee members are a diverse group. They represent five classifications: former players, former coaches, former journalists, former or current university administrators. We have a university president on the committee right now. And then sitting athletic directors. That's great because you get different perspectives. And every committee member brings a different perspective. They're united by their love of the game and they're wanting to get the right four teams. And they have gotten the right four teams all 5 years.
Something interesting, Mr. Hancock, that I noticed is that for the four teams, the number one seed is not has worked out where it's your number two, your number three, and even your number four have won the national championship. That just has to go to back up what you guys do and show that you are picking the right four teams, and it's just not, you know, the older formula would have been 1-2, and here we are during the College Football Playoff, and the one seed aren't the ones that are winning the national championships.
That's exactly right. I don't think I ever would have thought, though, that 5 years in we'd look back and say that number one is – 0-5.
Yeah. It was, you know, and it just kind of, and when it happened the first couple times, I was like, oh, okay. And then every year it's happened. It's like, wow. Well, it's like, it's almost if you get into the college football playoff, you're like, can we, is there any way that we can be the two seed? Can we? I'm talking with the executive director of the college football playoff here, Mr. Bill Hancock. What's the thought process, and I'm not that knowledgeable on it, so that's why I'm asking. So you guys have your 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds. What goes into the thinking of where they play their semifinals? Because sometimes I know last year there was some expectation that possibly that Alabama would be playing in Dallas because of logistics of both teams involved. But it ended up being Clemson and Notre Dame instead. So who makes those decisions, and what's the thought process behind those decisions?
The selection committee makes those decisions.
Okay.
But they're guided by the protocol, which says that number one team drives it. You would want to have the number one team play in front of a favorable crowd, and then the 2-3 game falls wherever it falls.
Oh, okay.
So last year we had Alabama, Oklahoma as a 1-4. Well, it wouldn't have been fair to Alabama to have to play Oklahoma in Dallas.
Okay.
Actually, turned out Miami and Dallas are about equidistant from Tuscaloosa.
That's right.
So it wasn't an issue about which place was closer for Alabama, but that's what it is. The number one team drives it. So you can speculate this fall when you see how the rankings are going. Hey, number one is so-and-so, and they're closer to Atlanta, so that's probably who they're going to get. That's how it works.
I got you. We're wrapping things up here with College Football Playoff Executive Director Bill Hancock here live from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Mr. Hancock, where do you see the future of the College Football Playoff? You started this thing from scratch. You know, you came in from the BCS era. You have it going. You're going well. Where do you see the future going? Because you come from also the basketball side of things in the NCAA, dealing with that, dealing with the NCAA tournament. So where do you see the future of the college football playoff in, say, the next 5 to 10 years?
Our future is bright. We are in this sixth year of a 12-year contract. And in a few years, two, three, four, I don't know how long, but we'll begin to discuss what to do after year 12. The future of college football is bright. The passion for this game is remarkable. I met a couple from Clemson fans last year in San Jose who had driven from Clemson, South Carolina to San Jose, California to watch their team play. I think that just exemplifies the passion for this game. And the playoff has been a terrific addition to college football. I think it's driven more interest in the regular season, and I'm sure there'll be a college football playoff in 30 years, and we'll all just sit back and say, "Wow, we were all involved in the beginning of it back in 2014."
Well, Mr. Hancock, appreciate you making time for us here on the show. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Raymond. Appreciate you having me on. Take care.
That's Bill Hancock, Executive Director of the College Football Playoff, joining us here live on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we will wrap up today's show. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Indiana's Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Indiana's Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row, right here at SEC Media Days in Hoover. There's something I didn't think I'd see, Cody, and I have to bring it to your attention. There's another radio station across the way interviewing a player who's dressed in the nines, and he's holding a Chucky doll from Child's Play.
The new one's coming out soon. The remake is coming out soon.
I just have questions. Today's an eye-opener. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, the film was officially announced in July of last year, and it will be coming out very soon this year. It's already out. Yeah, it's out already. So how about that? So there you go. That's what that is. So, I'm not going to go see it. Chucky's cool, don't get me wrong. Cool Halloween costume, just not my cup of tea for a movie.
And I'm not for sure why is it at SEC Media Days. I have questions.
The guy they're interviewing, his name's probably Chucky.
Probably.
If I had to make an educated guess.
Good call. This is why you're the producer extraordinaire back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad. It sounds
like
you calmed down.
No, you didn't even. You couldn't even get it out. I still hate Kellen Mond, though. I don't want him to get hurt. I don't want him to. You know, I want his.
He just gave the worst kind of bulletin board material,
right,
though, because last night I'm seeing on Twitter that Jamal Adams, you know, a bad man,
yeah, number 33,
that reps DBU. He was calling him out and laughing and saying, oh, y'all just beat us for the first time since joining the SEC, but you going to call us out? Right. Like, so when you got the former fathers of DBU, and they're taking notice while they're in the NFL, what do you think they're going to do to every single guy in that secondary and on that defensive side of the ball for LSU? They're going to be talking to them, giving them tips, everything else. So I'm not for sure that was the right decision.
I don't wish injury upon him. I hope he has a successful life in whatever he chooses to do with his life, but I hope he loses every football game he ever plays forever.
It's been a tremendous show. I want to thank all of our guests that we had on today's show, including Bill Hancock, Connor O'Gara, and everyone else in between that we had on today. We'll wrap up SEC Media Days tomorrow live from Radio Row. You are listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.